All right. Thank you, Lauren. I'd like to now start off the question and answer session with the questions posted online. And once we get through those questions, if time allows, I will open up the phone lines for additional questions. And before we begin, it was noted that some participants were having issues downloading the PowerPoint. We have uploaded a PDF version of that to try to alleviate those issues, but we will send out a notice once the PowerPoints are available online. And the first question is, if some waterways are seeing reduced drafts, then marine shipping is impacted. Any changes in prioritizing maintenance dredging under Map 21 linkage?
The Maritime Administration has just signed an interagency cooperative agreement with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And we're working with Corps field offices on specific marine highway corridors, looking to see what are the freight flows, what are the requirements for that field office in order to get dredging as a priority. You know, do they have a service? Are they looking to start a service? So it's in the relationship is in its infancy. Map 21 is really a highway bill and doesn't address dredging at all. So I think our best bet right now in terms of what Marriott can do is to coordinate with the Corps and see how we can influence core priorities through bringing to their attention the Marine Highway Program and what freight we know is moving.
Okay, thank you. The next question posted in the chat is, on the 64 Express, if the subsidy was to disappear, would the service continue?
The subsidy for the 64 Express, let me clarify this first. The state has put funds into it, and the MPO has put funds into it. The Marine Highway grant that it received was for equipment and is not an operational subsidy. The state and the MPO support this service with funds because of the public benefits that it provides, and they don't view it as a subsidy. If it costs so many millions of dollars to fix the roadway, or you could spend thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars instead of millions and have a service that relieves the heavy freight from the congested roadway and thereby saves you dollars, that's a public benefit. So for the 64 Express particularly, I just don't think that question is the right question.
Okay. Thank you. The next question. At a recent Northeast Freight Rail Conference, presenters remarked that marine transport from the Far East through the Suez Canal to the East Coast ports is increasing significantly, and that on-dock rail exists at 4 of the 6 major East Coast ports. Near-dock is available at the other 2. You mentioned short sea links to truck transport. What is the role for rail?
You know, rail, I mean, it's all intermodal. And I had the great experience of going to, forgive me while I relate this to a parable, like I had a great experience of going to Paducah, Kentucky. When they first told me I was going there, I was like, where? And I had to look it up on the map. And I did some research and I found that Paducah is where, I think it's 3 of our significant waterways come together. Over 450 million tons a year flow through Paducah, Kentucky. They've got all the majority of the Class 1 railroads go there. And they have, I think, 2 significant interstates that go past Paducah. Paducah is a transportation hub that America doesn't even know about. And I was able to sit and meet with the presidents of some of the railroads there. And the railroads were the only ones on their websites who said, we connect to the water and to the road, to truck services. The trucks didn't say, we connect to rail and water. And the water services, the barges, didn't say, we connect to rail and truck. But the rail said, we connect to water and truck. And you know, that's the only way that people are going to start to see that we have a system, is if our service operators put on their websites and advertise that they connect to the other modes. And the rail is doing it. We're working with the CSX to talking to them about the Marine Highway Service that is looking to be established in the Gulf. We're working very hard with Brownsville, Texas, and Manatee, Florida, two seaports, to get a service going between them, because it's 400 miles shorter to go by water between those two ports than it is to go by truck. And there was a service there that existed. In 20 months, it moved 25,000 truckloads of heavy freight or overweight or oversized freight. And 65% of those loads went on the CSX, and it was freight that originated in Mexico, went on the water, across over to Manatee, then connected to the CSX, and was destined for the Carolinas. So we're not ignoring rail. You're right, I spoke mostly about truck today, and I apologize for that. But it's intermodal, and it's an extremely good, extremely important part of the system.
Thank you. The next question is, do you know the maritime coordinator for the state of Missouri?
The lady that we work with mostly is Sherry Turley, and I used to know Sherry's boss when it was Ernie Perry, but Ernie has moved on to a different job, and I'm sorry I haven't memorized his replacement's name, but we work mostly with Sherry Turley.
Okay, thank you.
Hope that wasn't a test.
The next question. The biggest inhibitor in the Marine Highway program is labor, particularly the ILA and the ILWU. The Virginia example works because VPA controls the marine terminals at both ends. The Oakland-Stockton project is not moving forward because the ILWU will not agree to a barge manning structure. This has been labor's response in every project in which I have been involved. Recognizing that MARAD is charged with considering impacts on labor, MARAD should implement regulations that limit labor's ability to disrupt viable projects.
I understand your sentiment and invite you to call me separately, but I would like to say that this is the United States of America, and the federal government does not tell labor what to do or what not to do, and we never will. The labor is working with us in Stockton, and I can tell you that what you stated is not the complete picture, and so it gives the wrong impression to say just that, but because it's there's business agreements and negotiations going on that the federal government is not part of, I just can't say more than this time, just to say that that's not a complete picture. So, but please, if you want to, call me, and we can have a discussion offline.
And it looks like Barbara Nelson added in the chat
Hi, Barb.
A response to that question as well, stating that the ILA is involved in the Hampton Roads, and in the first 3 years of service, VPA did not control ports at both ends.
Well said, Barb. Good point.
The next question, the chat box.
Oh, and the other thing is, I just want to say, for the ILA's point of view, the ILA does have a small boat clause in their labor agreements, and those are important for many of the Marine Highway Services.
Okay. Thank you. The next question, has MARAD analyzed the influence of drought on the MHI system with respect to multimodal freight capacity on MHI corridors?
Yeah, do you mean on the inland water? I mean, do you mean draft or do you mean drought? I'm not sure which word they're trying to spell there. For the marine highway, you know, for the inland waterway, the drought has impacted some of the movement on the 10-ton Bigby waterway, on the part of the Mississippi and on the Missouri. For draft, draft for Marine Highways. Marine Highway is a good project for a port that does not have deep draft. They find the deepest draft for Marine Highway Services is 28 feet. Some of them can go down to 14 feet. Most of our inland waterways can accommodate the 14 feet.
Thank you. The next question is similar. What is the draft in the Mississippi from New Orleans to St. Louis?
I don't know, but the Marine Highway Services are running 14 feet, and that's they can handle that.
Okay, thank you. Next question. It seems funding is available in a fund to dredge and maintain water depth. Why is it not being obligated Who authorizes the funding?
The funding is authorized by Congress, and there's a bill right now being considered that in Congress that will authorize use of all the funds in the account for dredging.
Next question. Why is bulk cargo excluded? It too can go by truck, such as grain, building materials, and all the advantages of moving those products off land, highways to water exist, where highways exist.
Mr. Carroll, we agree with you completely. It's just that we don't need federal government to encourage bulk to move on the water. It does. The majority of our bulk does move on the water already. The only reason that we, you know, Congress mandated this program and legislated in 2007 is because they wanted to see containerized freight move on the water and roll-on, roll-off freight move on the water. And the market is not doing that. So as the government agency, we're trying to figure out on a national level, what are the impediments? Why isn't the market willingly putting cargo on the water when it's containerized or when it's roll-on, roll-off? We just want to see what do we do? What obstacles do we need to get out of the way so that the market can take over and get these services going?
Next question. A financial industrial analysis at the same Northeast Freight Rail event opined that there is too much spending on dredging at East Coast ports, that we only need 3 deepwater ports, New York, Norfolk, and Savannah. Is this consistent with your vision for the Marine Highway Network on the East Coast?
We're not here to pick winners and losers, and we're here to help the market find its way and incorporate the use of water into their intermodal planning. There's a lot of opinions on this, all different ways. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has authorized Miami to go to 50 feet. I see Miami's not in your list of deep water ports. Norfolk's a naturally deep harbor. New York is authorized to go to the right depth. Savannah and Charleston compete tremendously. So, whoever puts their package together and gets it going is fine. For Marine Highway Services, there's a number of different scenarios. Marine Highway Services can be viewed as feeder services to and from U.S. ports, carrying cargo that originated from an international service. So a Marine Highway Service could be a service between New York, New Jersey, and the state of Maine. Another Marine Highway Service could be a hub-and-spoke system where it handles domestic freight to and from a number of ports, just like airlines have their hub-and-spoke systems. So we aren't there yet. I can't tell you what it's going to look like. If I limit myself to one thing, I'll be limiting the whole program by my imagination. So we're really open to everything, and we reanalyze it. And this is a live, real program that changes as trends tell us to evolve.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Jim.
As the American Marine Highway gets up and running, is it likely to take freight from railroads first, then highways, especially since rail freight is less likely to be time sensitive?
That's an interesting question, Jim. But I think the way I'm going to answer it is that Marine Highways seems to be attracting heavyweight freight first. And then second, it's attracting oversized freight that cannot go on the railways, and that would require escort vehicles when it goes by road. Good thing you're good at this, Nicholas. So, I can't say it's going to take from one and take from the other. Our freight volumes are growing. Marine Highway Services are going to be capturing just small percentages of the actual freight. I don't see where it's going to hurt railroads. Where trucks became customers of railroads in the 1970s, and it's a growing customer base for railroads today, I see railroads and trucks being a growing customer base for Marine Highways, and the three of them working together in an efficient manner. Am I Pollyanna or what? Don't put that in the notes, please.
And the next comment seems to be an add-on to what was said earlier, and it's,
Oh, thank you, yes.
Ernie Perry is now the director of the Mid-America Freight Coalition at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
That's great, and a smart guy.
And I believe the comment below is an addition to the earlier comment about draft and drought, and it says that draft affected by drought.
Okay. So, yeah, on some of the waterways, it has impacted the services.
Okay. Next question. Are you looking at the impact of the Jones Act on the Marine Highway Program?
The Jones Act is very much a part of the Marine Highway Program. And if you want to call me, and we can talk offline about it. Marriott is very supportive of the Jones Act. It's necessary for the security of our nation. We work very closely with the Jones Act carriers and our shipbuilders. We're actually working with the program with the military to see is it possible to have the military fund the building of commercial highway, marine highway vessels that could be then used in the time of war, because we lack adequate U.S. flag vessels to support our national needs. So we view the Jones Act as being an integral part of the Marine Highway Program.
Thank you. Does Marin have a seat on the Freight Policy Council established by MAP 21, which will determine the scope of the National Freight Policy and Network?
Yes, we do. Our representative is Deputy Administrator Paul Janikin. He's a great guy, and he is a very active member on that council.
We have a couple of questions regarding MAP 21, and which begin, how much has funding been appropriated? And are there allocations by states? Is there a match requirement? And have there been any changes to the Tiger grant program from moving to MAP 21?
Okay, MAP 21 is basically Title 23, which is all highway. So when it relates to ports, it says that states will incur, it's like 600-page legislation, and believe it or not, I've read a lot of it. It has a requirement that's not a requirement. It encourages states to establish state freight advisory committees, and on those freight advisory committees, they're encouraged to have stakeholders that include seaports. MAP 21 has some programs in it that will help fund connectors to the ports. So that would be that last mile, we often call it. MAP 21 states requires the secretary to develop a national freight plan. That national freight plan will be derived from state freight plans. State freight plans, you can read them right now. There's a number of states that have them, and they're available on the FHWA website. A number of those have water components to them already. Those that don't have a water component, but they have a state freight plan, and they're on a marine highway corridor. We'll be reaching out to those states to see if there's some way that we could, you know, answer any questions for them or possibly provide some assistance in looking at their state freight plan to see if water should be part of their freight plan going forward. And then I see your question about Tiger. There is no Tiger provision at this time. So the Tiger Discretionary Grant Program had four rounds, and there is not a fifth round legislated.
Okay. At this time, I do not see any additional questions typed into the chat, but it does appear that people are typing. We'll go ahead and start reading the closeout information here. Please feel free to type in any questions you have while I'm reading this, and I'll go back and check before we close out, but thank you all today for attending the seminar. The recorded version of this event will be available within the next few weeks on the Talking Freight website. As a reminder, if you are an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for attending the seminar, please make sure you were signed in today with your first and last name, or you typed your first and last name into the chat box if you are attending with a group of people. Please download the evaluation form and email it to me after you've completed it. Please also download the CM credit instructions if you're unsure how to obtain your credits for today's seminar. The next seminar will be held on November 14th on the topic of freight transportation's role in economic development, though registration is not yet available. Please visit the Talking Freight website shown on the slide of the screen to register when it becomes open, and we will send out an email at that time. I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you've not already. And it does look like we have another question typed into the chat, and which reads, thanks for the reply on bulk cargo. Just keep in mind that having a designate maritime highway would provide additional support to ranking priorities for maintenance dredging. If you keep the draft for that movement, you then ensure that containerized freight movement stays an option.
Well said. Thank you very much.
And with that, I do not see any other questions typed into the chat, and I do not see anyone else typing. So I thank you for your participation today, and I hope you have a great day.
Thanks for this opportunity.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.